Hello and welcome to Bix is Alive, the radio program in cyberspace dedicated to the preservation and dissemination of the musical legacy of Bix Beiderbecke, the jazz genius from Davenport, Iowa. I am Albert Haim and this is WBIX, the virtual radio station on demand of the Bixography website. In the Bix is Alive program, I will play recordings and talk about the music and the life of Bix Beiderbecke. I will also play recordings by other musicians, past and present, who play in a style influenced and or reminiscent of Bix's unique approach to music. In the programs, I will feature various segments. In some instances, I will have a battle of the bands. On other occasions, I will focus on one particular musician or a theme as the centerpiece of the program. At other times, I will simply play recordings that I enjoy. The centerpiece of today's program is Pee Wee Russell. Pee Wee Russell played with Bix in St. Louis in 1925-1926, and also in the glorious summer of 1926 in the Blue Lantern, Lake Hudson, Indiana. There are two very important books about Pee Wee. One of them is a biography. It's entitled Pee Wee Russell, The Life of a Jazz Man by Robert Hilbert. It was published by Oxford University Press in 1993. And the other is Pee Wee Speaks, a discography of Pee Wee Russell by Robert Hilbert in collaboration with David Niven. This is part of the Studies in Jazz. This one is number 13, published by the Scarecrow Press Incorporated, in 1992. It's a very complete discography. Well, instead of first giving you a biographical account of or brief account of Pee Wee Russell's life, what I want to do is go straight into the music and read a few excerpts of relevance about the tunes, the first tunes that I'm going to play. I read from the biographical work. Word went out from New York, local, that Nichols was looking for some men. When Sonny Lee heard the news, he talked to Red about Pee Wee. Nichols remembered Pee Wee from the St. Louis days and had heard of his role in Trombauer's Great Arcadia Orchestra, already a legend among musicians. Pee Wee received a wire from Nichols offering him a job. Maybe Nichols wasn't Bix, but Pee Wee was happy to have the opportunity to play in a real jazz band again. He left for New York, first stopping off in Chicago to see some of his old buddies, pianist Jess Stacy, who was active in Chicago from 1925 on, remembered meeting him for the first time then, while he was working at the Midway Gardens with Moxie Spanier and Frank Teschmacher. Pee Wee stopped in to see Tesh. He said he was just passing through on his way to join Red Nichols in New York. Pee Wee was pretty famous among us musicians. He also struck up a friendship with drummer Dave Tough, who was playing in the band at the Commercial Movie Palace in Chicago. Pee Wee arrived in New York on August 14, 1927, and at first he was intimidated as he had been 3 weeks earlier when he joined Peck Kelly's Bad Boys. I went straight to the Old Manger Hotel, he told Whitney Balliot, and I found a note in my box. Come to a speakeasy under the Roseland Ballroom. I went over, and there was Red Nichols and Eddie Lang and Miff Maul and Vic Burton. I got panicky again. They told me there'd be a recording date at Brunswick the next morning at 9, and don't be late. I got there at 8:15. The place was empty except for a handyman. Maul arrived first. He said, "You look picked, kid," and opened the trombone case and took out a quart. Everybody had quarts. The first cut was Hoagy Carmichael's first published composition, Riverboat Shuffle, written for Bix and the Wolverines. The arrangement was by Fat Livingston, whose spiky clarinet style frequently was confused with Pee Wee's at this point. The first solo chorus was by Pee Wee, and we can hear how strong the Beiderbecke influence was, especially if we imagine how those same notes, the same phrasing, would have sounded coming from Bix's cornet. What a contrast to the staid Bix cliches heard in Nichols' solo. Nichols may have had the notes, but Pee-wee had captured the essence. Pee-wee sounds strong and confident, not in the least intimidated. The growls and squawks that became trademarks of his style in later years are not evident on this session or any of the others he made during this New York visit. Okay, so let's play Riverboat Shuffle. All the discographical information I'm going to give is from the Robert Hilbert book, Pee Wee Speaks, a discography of Pee Wee Russell. This is then August 15th, 1927. It says morning session. Red Nichols and his five pennies. Red Nichols on cornet. Leo McConville. Manny Klein on trumpet. Miff Maul trombone. Pee Wee Russell clarinet. Lenny Hayton piano. Dick McDonough guitar. Adrian Rollini bass sax. Vic Burton drums and harpophone. So the first tune will be Riverboat Shuffle, and this will be followed by another tune, another number recorded on the same session, Eccentric. So here is Pee Wee Russell with Red Nichols in 1927. Mm-hmm. Did you notice how different the arrangements for the two numbers were? The first number, which was Riverboat Shuffle, features each of the members of the band individually in solos. On the other hand, the second number, Eccentric, has lots of ensemble work. And I thought that those three, one cornet and two trumpets played together, was pretty spectacular. Okay, what I want to do now is read the introduction to the discography of Pee Wee Russell. It's a brief biographical account of his life. And so here we go. Pee Wee Russell was one of the most interesting and controversial musicians in jazz history. He was born Charles Ellsworth Russell Jr. in St. Louis, Missouri on March 27, 1906, but much of his childhood was spent in Muskogee, Oklahoma. A rebellious youth, he was sent to Western Military Academy in Alton, Illinois, where he lasted a year before being dismissed. By age 16, Russell was on the road playing alto and tenor saxophones and clarinet with a variety of dance bands, including the Herbert Berger Orchestra of St. Louis, with whom he made his first recordings, and from whom, before he was fully grown, he acquired his nickname. While still a youngster, he joined the legendary band led by Peck Kelly in Houston, a band which included New Orleans clarinetist Leon Ropolo and Texas' own trombonist Jack Teagarden. Other early jobs included an association with Wingy Manoni in San Antonio, Texas, and long, close friendship with Big Spiderbeck, who greatly influenced Russell's early style. In 1927, Russell hit the big time when he played and recorded with cornetist Red Nichols in New York. Following a 1929 cross-country tour with Nichols and the Cass Hagen Band, Russell returned to St. Louis for several months, during which time he changed his clarinet style, utilizing a variety of vocalizations in his playing, including the frequent use of a dirty tone, guttural grunts, and bent tones and bent notes. When he returned to New York and resumed playing with Nichols' groups, his new style was praised by some as brilliantly inventive and scorned by others who maintained he simply did not know how to play his instrument. Such diverse opinions persist among listeners and musicians to this day. New Orleans trumpeter and showman Louis Prima hired Russell to join his successful group at the famous Door, first in New York and then in Hollywood, where they also appeared in motion pictures. In 1937, Russell began a 10-year stint at Nick's in Greenwich Village, where he was featured almost continuously in the company of Eddie Condon, Bobby Hackett, Miff Maul and Muggsy Spanier, and others. He recorded frequently for Milt Gabler's Commodore label and appeared in almost all of the Condon-associated jazz concerts and radio broadcasts produced by Ernest Anderson during that time. But by the late 1940s, Russell's playing had deteriorated and had his physical and psychological condition. His lifelong addiction to alcohol had taken its toll, and on New York's Eve 1950, he collapsed on a bandstand in San Francisco. Little hope was held for his recovery, but he outstanded his doctors, friends, and fans by surviving a major operation. Within a year, he had begun the most productive and, some believe, most fruitful part of his career. Shrugging off his long association with Nixieland jazz, he began playing frequently with mainstream musicians such as Buck Clayton and Robbie Breff. Eventually, he recorded with such modernists as Thelonious Monk and Jimmy Giuffre, and co-led a quartet with trombonist Marshall Brown, which explored the then modern repertoire. With the encouragement of his wife, Mary, he took up oil painting and became quite proficient at it. His musical creativity flourished, as well as he became a mainstay at jazz festivals throughout the United States. He toured Europe, both as a single and as a member of George Wein's Newport All-Stars, and played in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan as a member of Eddie Condon's All-Star Ensemble. When Mary died suddenly in 1967, however, Russell began drinking heavily again, all but abandoning his music and painting. On February 15, 1969, he died in Alexandria, Virginia. Okay, let's continue with the music now. 2 weeks after the recording session that I played, on August 30, 1927, Miff Maul and his Little Maulers got together and made a number of recordings. The Maulers here are Red Nichols on cornet, Miff Maul on trombone, Peewee Russell on clarinet and tenor, Arthur Schott on piano, Dick McDonough on banjo, on Feeling No Pain Only, and Eddie Lang on guitar, Adrian Rollini on bass saxophone, and Vic Burton on drums. And the two tunes that I want to play are Imagination and Feeling No Pain. So let's listen then to Peewee Russell with Miff Maul and his Little Maulers in 1927. Thank you. Again, two very different arrangements for the two tunes. First, Imagination, a very modernistic tune by Fud Livingston, pensive, complex. The second tune, Feeling No Pain, dynamic. And this shows the scope of the Red Nichols, Miff Maul groups in 1927, 1928. They were really breaking new grounds in jazz. Okay, let's continue with the music. I want to play a couple of numbers. One left over from the, let's see, from the August 30th session of Miff Mauls and His Little Maulers, the original Dixieland One Step. And then I'll go to September 1st, 1927, again Miff Maul and His Little Maulers, this time with Red Nichols on cornet, Miff Maul on trombone, Pee Wee Russell on clarinet and tenor, Arthur Schott on piano, Eddie Lang on guitar, Dick McDonough on banjo, Adrian Rollini on bass sax, and Joe Tarto on tuba, and Vic Burton on drums. And there were three tunes recorded on this day. I'll first play the first tune that was recorded, My Gal Sal. So here is Pee Wee Russell in 1927 with Miff Mauls and His Little Maulers. Thank you. again, and I didn't do this on purpose, two very different arrangements. The first one, very dynamic. The second one, more pensive and slow. And I wonder if the coda on My Gale Sail reminds me of a, reminds you of a Bix recording. Okay, I want to play now the last two recordings waxed on the September 1st, 1927 session of Miff Molls and His Little Mollers. I already gave the composition of the band: Nichols, Moll, Russell, Schott, Lang, McDonough, Rollini, Tardo, and Burton. So here we have Honolulu Blues and The New Twister. Again, Pee Wee Russell with Miff Molls and His Little Mollers, 1927.
Thank you.
That was a very nice clarinet solo by Pee Wee in the New Twister. Okay, now I want to move on to the Charleston Chasers. This is one of the pseudonyms or names used by Red Nichols, Miff Maul, for their recordings in 1927. This is under the direction of Red Nichols, September 6, 1927. With Red Nichols on cornet, Leo McConville on trumpet, Miff Maul on trombone, Pee Wee Russell clarinet and tenor, Lenny Hayton piano, Dick McDonough banjo and guitar, Jack Hanson on tuba, Vic Burton on drums. And the two tunes I want to play are Five Pennies and Sugarfoot Strut has a vocal by Craig Leach. So let's listen then to Pee Wee Russell with the Charleston Chasers in 1927.
sweet and low cod ginger cake soup, brown as a cookie, Deacon Jones soup, even at Sookie, forming a ring, Ellen sing, let's go. Hams are for young and old, dig them up cold, have them rolled in the cold. Food for the sod is good for our bodies and souls. Black is old Joe, brown is what Sam is, yellow is cold, but yo's what a yam is, the trouble to tie, do the underfoot try.
You have enjoyed this program on Pee Wee Russell. There are many, many more recordings with the Red Nichols in 1927. And I will have another program on Pee Wee Russell, perhaps next month, perhaps the month after that. But what I want to do now is play a couple of recordings by modern musicians. I haven't done this for quite a while, and I really should. The CD that I have chosen for today is entitled Echoes in the Wax, and it's Dan Levinson's Roof Garden Jazz Band, Jazz to J-A-S-S. The liners for this CD are written by Richard Zodhalter, and I simply would like to read the first two paragraphs. By far the easiest way to get Dan Levinson agitated and talking nonstop is to ask him ever so casually whether he considers himself a genuine jazz musician. I don't know what that means, is a characteristic rejoinder. I hate labels. If you have to put a label on it, have to say this is jazz, this isn't jazz, there's something wrong. It's either music or it's not music. Good music or bad music, nothing else matters. Okay, this CD, Echoes of the Wax, is a recreation of a number of small groups from the late 1910s and early 1920s. I chose two sides from this CD, Fidgety Feet, which was recorded in 1918 by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, and Can You Tell, from 1920, originally recorded by Ray Miller's Black and White Melody Boys. Now, the musicians in the band for the first track that I'm going to play, Fidgety Feet, are John Eric Kelso on cornet, Dan Levinson on clarinet, alto and tenor saxophones, David Sager on trombone, Tom Roberts on piano, and Kevin Dorn on drums. And for the recording of Can You Tell, the composition of the group is exactly the same, except that now John Gill is added on banjo. So let's listen to Dan Levinson's Roof Garden Jazz Band in the year 2003. Thank you. if it weren't for the quality of the sound and the sound and the stereo separation, one would even think that we are listening to original recordings from the 19-teens or the 1920s. These fellows play in a very authentic manner, and what's more, they show respect for the old recordings. And these are homages, basically tributes to the old musicians. Well, let's get back to Bix now. We have come to the end of today's edition of Bix is Alive, the radio program in cyberspace dedicated to the preservation and dissemination of the musical legacy of Bix Beiderbecke, the jazz genius from Davenport, Iowa. Please join me again in 4 weeks over WBIX, the virtual radio station on demand of the Bixography website, for a new edition of the program. Until next time, this is Albert Haim saying, through his music, Bix is alive.